Today, the false dichotomy of left versus right, communist versus fascism. Yes, this is for you, you homeschooler, you teacher, because your high school student is going to get into it if you don't as an individual. And how could you stay away from politics in a day like today? Okay, I'm going to explain it all to you, and it goes in with our series of false choices. Like, it has to be this or that. No, what about both and or either or something else? Yes, okay. False dichotomies. Stay with me to the end, and I'll give you some practical options. Today, wrapping up our series about false dichotomies, meaning choices. And I'm sorry I'm clipping. I apologize for the strange sound. If anybody knows something, let me know. Okay, same mic. Trying to be careful. All right, so we talked about the false choice that's in early childhood education. Oh, no, they should play, they should play. Oh, they have to learn the numbers. Okay, look, it's not an either or. Okay, we talked about the false dichotomy in grammar school literature. Oh, no more dead white men. It has to be modern and diverse. No, excuse me. Let's do good literature, not trashy. And it can be diverse, for heaven's sake. You can read Hans Christian Andersen, and you can read some Japanese haiku, just as an example. Okay. Okay, these false dichotomies are put down upon us either through stupidity or through very methodical, tyrannous, malevolent, nefarious intent. And I really think is in fact happening, right? Because we're so busy fighting with one another that we are busy fighting with one another. They are taking our productivity, enslaving us, and possibly worse. Okay, so the third in our series, we're going to talk about what might seem to be politics, but I talk about it in terms of political philosophy, economic philosophy, sociology, history, social studies. And then we're going to talk about it in terms of pedagogy, all three of these in terms of pedagogy, okay? So in the United States today, we tend to think of left versus right. Well, it's not just English-speaking people. Left versus right, communist versus fascism. And if you're not, according to somebody's viewpoint, whatever viewpoint that is, then you're called an extremist. So the most moderate positions that have stood the test of time for more than 100 years, like pro-manufacturing economy in the United States, is called far-right extremism. Okay, and that's, actually maybe it is worse, but it wasn't so many years ago when to talk about Social Security and Medicare, Medicaid, and workers' comp, because that is socialism, that was called communism. Well, okay, so what we need to do is unpack these terms. If you're going to argue, if you're going to make assertions, if you're going to talk, you need to understand what definitions are. Okay, so there are a variety of economic systems. There's agrarianism. There is mercantilism. The term capitalism was formed by Marx, but anyway, so that's mercantilism bigger, really, because we had the banking system back all the way to the Medicis, at least. So we have capitalism. And we could have something else. We could have, you know, ecotopia, or we could have the gift economy. There are a range of possible economic systems. You don't have to have either capitalism or communism, okay? And even socialism, all socialism is built upon capitalism. You have to have somebody make it some money before you can distribute it. That's never talked about, but that's... Okay, and then you have a range of governmental systems. Okay, and typically in an intro social class, we talk about monarchy and democracy, but holophone people, there are a whole lot more. Okay, so there's anarchy. There is extended families, which you might call tribes. You might and lump that together because that's not all the same. Okay, and then there is monarchy. There's dictatorship, and there's more than one kind of dictatorship, oligarchy. There's democracy and democratic republican, which is what we have in the United States. Now, there's this whole controversy of we're not democracy. Well, yes, we're not a mobocracy in the way that France was. Our founders said republic, but today republic can mean other things like North Korea. So I think it's best to call us a democratic republic where we have representative and limited government. Originally, it was limited. Since then, we've had progressivism take over, which is really socialism. And to really understand this to the depth, the history and the philosophy of this, there are some online courses by Hillsdale on, let's see, Constitutional 101 and then 201, really talks about the progressive movement in the United States, Woodrow Wilson, and so forth. I'm not going to get into that. But suffice it to say, we have a mix and match situation between economic systems and governmental systems. And typically, we reduce this, conflate this down to democratic capitalism or oligarchic capitalism versus communism. And we don't study the history of communism. Well, we don't study history very much at all. We put the, okay, invidious comment. We put the coaches in charge of, okay. Anyway, moving right along. No, really, we don't spend enough time. A really good history class would read original documents. And how many times have you been assigned the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution to read in our government schools? It makes no sense. But anyway, the history of communism. We ought to study world history too. So the Bolshevik Revolution was almost bloodless. Yes, the monarchs died, the royals died. So the initial, but then after that, there was a purging of the socialists and the communists, and there was a bloodbath. Now, one of those was named Sorokin, and he had been a communist, and he was imprisoned by the Bolsheviks, and then he was able to escape, and he came to the United States and taught sociology at Harvard, and incidentally, was not teaching socialism, which is a surprise. And he was teaching, he's famous for teaching altruism, and he had a theory of cycles that societies would cycle between being sensate and idealist. Anyway, so, and we're, of course, at the cusp now, but he was quite famous by the 50s in teaching at Harvard in sociology. Back to communists. Okay, what we don't understand is how bloody that was, because they were purging communists and the Trotskyites. I met a Trotskyite in New York City. Of course, that was decades ago. And similarly, Mao, although he did have an actual battle against Chiang Kai-shek, who was an ally of the United States, then after he got in power, it was bloody. Millions died. And it wasn't set, because after his revolution and millions dying, then there was the Cultural Revolution in the 60s and people were starving to death. Really, people my age. When I was 13, Chinese girls my age didn't have periods because they were so hungry. And they were eating things that we would never eat. By contrast, today, China has great industrial cities, and they're, you know, prosperous, you know, there are freeways and tall high-rise buildings. When I was young, they didn't have cars. They clogged their city streets with bicycles, and women did not have money. Well, it wasn't the culture either. To dress nicely, they all wore the same kind of dowdy pant uniform types, because that was the ideology of the communism that they practiced. But also, they didn't have money. They didn't have money for good enough food and for a choice of clothes or what have you. But today, Chinese people can invest in real estate, both here and here. But anyway, but back then, Mao, or a little before that, Mao was trying to have iron smelters in every backyard. I mean, what we're talking about is crazy economic policies. And even today, very authoritarian. So communism is authoritarian socialism. So you have a mixture of governmental and economics. All right, so you have central control of the economy. The Nazis, by contrast, oh, and by the way, if you're a communist or any kind of a socialist and the communists don't like you, they call you a fascist, right? So this is a dichotomy. It's an either or. Either you're with us, good Marxist communist or good Mao communist, or you're a fascist. But let's look at Hitler's Nazis. The National Socialist Party. They also believed in centralized control. They just didn't control the means of production. Hitler did not control the means of production, but the central government was in charge of everything. They were authoritarian. And so I might have said in my class, they were authoritarian capitalists. You see. And today, young people who are poorly educated, of course, but they know more than everybody else, because part of that poor education tells them, this is it, this little bit is it, this is it, and everybody who doesn't think this is stupid and not educated. Really, 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 the pride comes in our educational system. And so they will think, okay, Hitler is a Nazi, yes, and he was a racist, absolutely. And he was a nationalist, and therefore all nationalists are fascist. Is that true? No, in fact, Hitler wasn't a nationalist. He didn't just care for Germany. He wanted to control other countries. He was an imperialist. Hitler, newsflash, was an imperialist by definition. He was a racist, right? But Aryans are not just Germans. Aryans have settled from India through England. So don't be so arrogant, because arrogance makes you stupid. Learn definitions. Learn that there are more viewpoints than your little one, and be sure your little one makes sense. Okay, so the false dichotomy of communist versus fascism. This tiny dot of thought has come to define all of political discussion. You must not let this happen to you, because that is contrived. It's contrived. You've been manipulated. Now, one thing that my young friends, my young educated friends, are very concerned about is populism. But once again, let's define, what is populism? Notice that populism is not just far-right extremism. No, populist can be populist on the right, populist on the left. Populism just means you're for the populace. if you're for the populace, how is that different from democracy? And isn't it the fundamental assumption of democratic republicanism? But if you say populism and you conflate it automatically with right extremism, then you think all populists are necessarily fascists. And that's crazy. What everybody hates is authoritarians on the right, authoritarians on the left, authoritarians in the middle, folks. Authoritarians can be in the middle, and they can control you without you even knowing. It's a lack of liberty that is what people really hate. But as long as they can pull the wool over your eyes and make you think in false dichotomies, then they can make you afraid of whatever they want you to be afraid of. And so therefore anything that questions their power becomes the enemy, and you become the weapon. And folks, you have better things to do than that. So I want you to understand false dichotomies, and I want you to understand that when you pick curriculum. And as your students progress toward adulthood, they need to be afforded more viewpoints. So I want you to teach the very best fundamental values to your children. So you inculcate a personality that you're going to want to live with when they grow up. So a small child, you help them discover the world, how to deal with people. And then a primary student, grammar school student, you teach them the fundamentals of good character. This is what our government schools don't do, and for decades have said they couldn't do. Now they have changed their minds and they want to inculcate a very different value set from their parents. And that's why they're doing it secretly. But anyway, well, one of the reasons why. So I want you to teach fundamental values. And therefore, I think it is right, good, and proper that you teach fundamental, original values for this nation. I'm standing in the United States. And so if you're a student in the United States, then you ought to study the original documents. By the time you're sixth grade, you should be reading the original documents and know the real history of the founding. But by the time a student is in high school or rhetoric, you should be allowing them to see the contrary viewpoints. They should already know their American history. And similar with Canada, you've got their Charter of Rights and so forth. And this, it's similar in most countries, although there are some countries that haven't been nearly as stable. They've had one constitution or another, but you should learn the history of your country. But by high school, you should know what the contrasting viewpoints are. So you should know the contrast between the traditional limited government viewpoint and the progressive viewpoint that expanded the executive branch into regulation making and they're not courts, but regulatory judiciary, I'm going to call them. Anyway, so and we see this playing out in the news. So you have agencies, and they're asked, did you discuss this with the White House? No, we never discuss our business with the White House. But, excuse me, what? The Constitution does not provide for these agencies. You are a function of the expansion of the cabinet under the president. So either the president knew about it, well, we've got one of our agencies. Anyway, either one isn't good. But the point is, all of these things matter. By the time your student is 17, 18, he ought to be applying what he knows about this to the news. When I taught freshmen sociology, and often my students were sophomores or whatever, but before class, as they were sitting around and we were waiting for more students to come in, I often would engage them in a discussion of the day's news. What do y'all think about that? How do you analyze that? And Of course, that wasn't part of their grade. They had to learn the curriculum. Because although I was in a professorial role and I could choose my textbook, really, I was an instructor at a community college, and I wanted my students to graduate knowing the basic stuff that one might expect somebody learning intro soc to know. And I did search through those textbooks. And my students really honored me that I hosted fair and balanced discussions. Now, they told me many, for all those years, that sociology leaned toward the left. And by the time I left, I realized they were right. But it didn't matter. You had to learn the textbook, and you had to, well, and a little more than the textbook, you also had to learn how to think and how to argue civilly. And that's what I am urging you to do, to prepare your high school students. And there's no reason why a good homeschool high school student couldn't be doing work at the level of these community college freshmen, for sure. And the private schools in this town, the private schools, the better private schools, are exceeding that academic level. But the point is, they should be exposed to various viewpoints, and they should know how to argue first based on definitions and second on logic. Okay, they need to know how to juxtapose, and they need to know how to get out of the trap of a false dichotomy. And incidentally, when we talk about definitions, you might want to get yourself a couple of books. Get yourself a Webster's Dictionary of 1828. If you're reading documents from the founding of this nation, you need a dictionary of 1828 so you know what they're saying. And then get yourself another, something like the new Oxford American Dictionary. If you have the OED, if you have access to the Oxford Dictionary with all the etymology, that's wonderful, but I doubt you're going to buy that. That's something you find in a library on the dictionary stand. So that's the standard. You know, people who speak Spanish talk about the Royal Institute of Language that's headquartered in Madrid. And so there's an orthodoxy about how Spanish is spoken all over the world. And we don't have that in English. But the closest thing we have is the OED, the Oxford English Dictionary. Don't depend on the online dictionary, because the definitions change. The definitions can be twisted, and certainly the conversation is twisted. Okay, so false dichotomy between left and right. That's the point for today. Now, I want to tell you that just like early childhood educators have been torqued around by a false dichotomy of, they have to play. No, they have to learn. Play, learn, play. Come on now. Or art, no craft, no art, no craft, no. Like, could we not have both? Give me a break and a half. Is this really worth arguing about? What are we not doing while we're arguing? And who is trying to get you to argue? Okay. So all of this has come into the discussion about pedagogy. And I'm beginning to study the history of pedagogical philosophy in the United States, right? Studying what has been taught in teachers' colleges all these years. And you would be surprised. So back in the colonies, we had the highest literacy and the highest percentage of college-educated people of anywhere in the world. And today, the United States is last of all the industrialized countries in the world. And we put an enormous amount per capita of money. It's not because we're failing to do money. No, we've changed our educational philosophy. And what I see coming down the pike in terms of conversation is even more concerning. So to tell you briefly and succinctly, and you're not going to believe it, but it's true, that communists decided to incrementally take over our school system. They're actual documents from 1820, but you can see that this happened, the imposition of sight reading instead of phonics happened back in the 1800s. So, but since the 1920s, they've been trying. And I just read a book published by a Christian accreditation, so for Christian schools, that is nothing short of the deceptive dialectic process. And it's a false dichotomy. Either you come along with our change that we're not defining, or else you're for the rote factory learning, the rote memorization, that also Germans, because the Frankfurter School was the group of communists that came over here and took over the higher ed and pedagogy. But the Frederick Taylorism, that's also German. Either you're for us on our undefined change, or you're old-fashioned and need to be retired. They actually say that. They actually say that. It's very. So the dialectic process, if you've had much philosophy or been to seminary or whatever, you would know a little sanitized bit of Hegel is thesis, synthesis, antithesis, synthesis. And so this is just one of those little ditties that you learn when you have a textbook course, and you're supposed to learn that this is how thought progresses. But in actuality, the dialectical process is a method that communists use to change culture. And so whatever the traditional culture is, there's a little change, and then it progresses further. But if you start out with poem line truth, it doesn't matter how small the change is, you're going to have something that's not quite plumb line. You see, it's an hath God said methodology. It's a hath God said methodology. Christians will follow me. But just know this. That's my analysis. But just know this, that the communists explicitly and in a documented way have used the dialectic process in our culture and specifically in our schools for teachers to change our methods. So we now assume that communist methods are how to teach. This is not how we taught 200 years ago. It has nothing to do with how Jesus taught. So there are other methods, but you wouldn't know it. And that's the point. So I'm trying to help you get out of false dichotomies. And I'm also hoping that I'm bringing you a lot more peace. You can teach your child while they play when they're little. You can have good time-tested literature and even present them with some authors who were not white males. Although, you know, in history, the women were often taking care of the children, so there were more male authors, but anyway, and you don't have to present them with only English-speaking literature. Okay, English literature. So, and you don't have to be weaponized by some false conversation because you weren't really told what these words mean. They intentionally let you assume. You weren't told what the outcome was. So every time communism has been tried, communism as an economic centralized control of the economy, every time it's been tried in European nations, in Asian nations, and in South American nations, it has always impoverished the people. China has continued centralized control, but they have adopted capitalist ways, and that's why they have prospered. But look at Cuba. So, and Cuba, intelligent, wonderful doctors that come out of Cuba, but you have, if you go in the hospital, you have to pay for your anesthesia that you purchase elsewhere, otherwise you're going to have a surgery without anesthesia because Cubans don't have enough to eat. Okay, so don't be fooled. Don't be hoodwinked. Hoodwinked is the right word. the wool pulled over your eyes, and then weaponized as you be the weapon for somebody else's benefit, okay? And teach this to your children. Teach this to your children. Teach the false dichotomy trap to your children. Okay. And may you be blessed. May you be blessed with peace and confidence, knowledge and wisdom. Blessings of the Lord be yours today and forever. Amen.
Thank you for joining us for the Great Shalom broadcast with your host, Sharon Sarles. Sharon is an author, educator, minister, parent, and grandparent committed to sharing the understanding of God's love and desire that all children experience optimal well-being in this generation and the generations to come.